You wanted the best. You got the best. Would you settle for slightly above average? All right then, have we got a show for you. Coming to you live out of the Gutter Man Cave in beautiful Louisville, Kentucky. Here are your hosts, Andre Dominguez and Mike Gutterman, with the Negative Positives Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 263. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from a sweltering hot Gutterman Cave in Louisville, Kentucky. It is the Monday night episode. That means we have a guest and also everyone's favorite co-captain all the way out in the City of Angels, La La Land, Los Angeles, California, Mr. Andre Dominguez. How are you doing tonight, Andre?
Doing very well, Mike. How are you?
Good, good. Hot, but good. So, our special guest tonight, none other than the old camera guy himself, Mr. Dave Mahaly. How are you doing tonight, Dave?
Here's how I'm doing.
There it is.
Popped her open. This is Bud Select 55. It's the only beer wimpier than that 64-calorie crap that you've been drinking lately.
You're drinking a Bud 55?
I like you, Dave.
Yeah.
Nice. Man, you're getting 9 less calories than I am. So there you go. But you know, no wonder you have such a amazing physique, I would imagine, right?
If you call a dad bod amazing, sure.
Well, it is all the rage these days. So I've been working on mine every time we do this podcast. But all right. Since this is your first time on the show, and actually really your first time full podcast debut, why don't you tell the fine folks how you kind of got into this photography thing and what all you're doing with the YouTube and just a little bit about yourself, Dave.
Sure. I started much like Michael Bartosek. I wanted to slow down. So, I grew up in the 1970s and 1980s and, like most people back then didn't shoot a whole lot of digital, right? Film photography was just photography. So that's what you had. You had film and that's kind of what I grew up on. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have much in the way of, 35 millimeter cameras. We had mostly just, cheap little 110 and 126 cameras. We didn't have a lot of money, so we did most of our shopping at Kmart. And recall, all of Kmart's photography stuff was branded Focal.
Yep.
That was kind of like their house brand, if you remember that.
Yep.
So we had kind of a crappy 126 Focal camera. Back then in the photo department, I don't know if maybe, Mike, you might remember this. Kmart had kind of a cartoon mascot named Dusty Lens Cap.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was kind of like this. He was this weird, kind of a creepy guy. He had a fedora on with a roll of film kind of sprawled across it and kind of this pervy trench coat. Honestly, he kind of looked like a guy who would offer kids candy out of a van with no windows. I was always kind of creeped out by this guy. But anyway, he was the Kmart mascot. And again, a little sketchy. But here's how much Kmart, if you remember back in the day, thought of their customers. You couldn't even just go to the bathroom back then. They would actually have to buzz you in. I don't know if you remember that, Mike, but
oh yeah,
they had a little buzzer. It actually kind of sounded like the Gray Lab timer that you always kind of get Andre with on those roundtable shows. They might use, I don't know, it might be the same thing. But I went to college in the late 80s, early 90s, and I kind of got away from photography for a while. And then I guess it was probably maybe late 99. I was kind of searching the interwebs and found out about the whole Lomography movement. Uh-huh. And bought the hype, drank the Kool-Aid, and I got myself a Lomo LCA, and again, uh-huh, this was probably 99, maybe early 2000, and I was hooked. And you've got one now, so you know how it is. It's a pretty sweet little camera.
Oh yeah it is. It's a real fun camera. And they were kind of pricey back then, weren't they? Because the hype was really kind of a trap. Did you get in before the prices went way up?
It was probably the better part of $200, I think. Back then I wasn't married. I had disposable income. But right. That was kind of my main rig for a long time. Then I started checking out the thrift stores and, I picked up all kinds of point and shoots and, not just kind of the crappy ones you get now. I mean, back in the day, you could get like a Yashica T4 or a Stylus Epic, for a dollar or two. It was kind of like the golden age of thrift stores. And then I guess after that, probably 2008, 2009, my boss just gave me his wife's Olympus OM2N, whole kit of lenses and everything, because his wife was going digital. And I thought at the time, well, you know, this is great. Now, how do I use this? Because, I mean, I really didn't have any experience other than kind of the LCA and the crappy 126 camera I used as a kid. So that kind of got me into the world of SLRs. And probably around the same time, I discovered the FPP. And I think they probably influenced kind of all of us, really. I know.
Oh, yeah.
Just them. So that really kind of cemented my whole love for film photography. And again, that was probably about better part of 10 years ago. And, you know, here we are today.
It's amazing to me how many times I hear that story where, you know, somebody finds the FPP and then just becomes obsessed with film photography. It's amazing how many times we've heard that story here on this podcast. And
yeah,
it just seems so many people went that same route, you know.
You think you're living in this little bubble, like you're the only person that shoots film still, and then you find out there's other weirdos out there too that like the same thing.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Good old FPP, man. Again, we got to give them all the credit for a good portion of what's going on in film photography. I mean, they definitely have had probably the biggest influence, I think, on kind of growing this thing. So
I would think so too. I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually bought some film from them today. Some of that, what is it? It's the Svima super positive 0.8 ISO film that apparently if the marketing hype is real, gives you black and white positives when you develop in standard black and white chemistry, and that kind of stuff, like, you're only going to find with FPP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, that should be, man, a black and white slide. That would be, are you going to put them in your projector, make a slide projector situation out of those, Andre? Or?
That's the goal, is a little kind of, you know, thing that I've been exploring recently is how do I get into black and white slides with the purpose of projecting them, because otherwise why would I be shooting black and white slides? But you know, there's just some expensive options out there, and DIY chemistry kits that either, you know, are expensive and only do a few rolls, or really, really expensive but do like 20 rolls of only a few different kinds of film that I don't, you know, shoot very often and that are expensive in and of themselves. So this is going to be my kind of first foray into, you know, let's see how this works.
Right. Perfect.
Have you shot anything that slow before? Or?
No, the slowest I've ever shot was the 2238, which I haven't actually even developed yet. And I rated both at 25. Okay. Haven't even gone down to ISO 6 to use with the CineStill DF96 monobath. So 0.8 is definitely going to be really slow. Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Well, you don't lack plenty of light out there though, so you should be okay, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. May have to bust out the tripod for once in my life.
Right. I actually got an email today from Mr. Mike Rosso. He was informing me that my second cartridge of Super 8 movie film arrived to him, and he's starting to work on it. So, actually mentioned that if I wanted to have him back on the show to talk about Super 8 a little bit, he'd be glad to come on and do that. So maybe in the next couple of months or so, I can get Mr. Rosso back on the show to talk, give us his, so he can spread the love of Super 8 a little more. So there you go. So
nice.
It should be very cool. Yeah. But always good to hear from Mike. So. This is the first segment where we like to talk about our weeks. And Andre, you kind of went into yours a little bit there, I think. But what have you been up to this week?
Yeah, so photography-wise, haven't been doing a whole lot. We've been doing another wave of Labbox fulfillment, Labbox Kickstarter reward fulfillment over at CineStill, and that's been sort of taking up a whole bunch of my time. We've been went in on a Saturday and put in some overtime to try to get those out as quick as possible. I have, though, just been bringing to work with me every day the Leica M2, and then switching around between the Voigtlander 35 f1.4 Nocton and my LTM adapted 50mm Elmar 2.8 collapsible, just to kind of see whether or not I want to keep the Leica lens. And see whether or not I enjoy shooting a 50mm lens through that viewfinder. So yeah, it's just been kind of good to, you know, while I can't, not can't, but haven't been taking that many pictures at work or kind of after hours, at least on my commute to work and during my lunch break when I go out to grab something to eat. Just doing a little bit of street photography around the new neighborhood of the new Cinestill HQ. And then kind of printing-wise, developing and printing-wise, I'm sitting on about, I think, 10 rolls now. Maybe half of those are from my trip to Big Bear, but the Cinestill darkroom isn't currently set up yet. And I don't actually think that we have a changing bag between all of us, since we usually will just kind of go into the darkroom, slap on the infrared goggles, and be able to see everything that we're doing. We should have the darkroom kind of back up and running, hopefully by the end of this week. But so my developing has been sort of on hold, but that has given me time here at home to start printing. I did 17 little 4x6s today, most of which are going to be going to my sister for a little birthday gift. Printed some photos that I took back in, what was it, December, late December, early January, holiday season of 2017 going into 2018. So the whole thing that my you know, parents say when I'm kind of documenting family moments are like, all right, you know, that's great, but can you take them with your phone too, because this is going to take us 6 months. This has definitely been the longest gap between shooting and them actually seeing the photos. So, but they're all going to be you know, going into a little stiff card mailer with a typewritten note to my sister for her 25th birthday. So that should be fun. And I think I maybe have like probably under 10 prints left. And then I will kind of be ready to purchase my first set of new paper since buying this printer. It's kind of been amazing how much this pack of 100 just standard little HP glossy photo paper 4x6s of this 100 pack have lasted me, because I felt like I've just been sort of printing with reckless abandon, and I'm only just now, like a couple months later, getting to the point where it's like, yeah, I gotta start thinking about buying more paper.
yeah well, 100 photos is a lot, you know, so that's more than most people print these days. So you're doing pretty good, man. And it's good to see that, you know, if nothing else, the HP is it's influencing you to print more. So, you know, that's always a good
absolutely
thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it so many times, and I'm probably sounding like a broken record at this point, but it so lowers the barrier to entry for printing, and the quality is good enough where, you know, I'm not sort of scrutinizing and pixel peeping the prints themselves. I just kind of go through the folders in my hard drive, find something that I like, hit print, select color, black and white, and it comes out looking great. And stick it in an envelope, send it out. Just lots of fun, super cheap. Really can't get any better than that.
Sure. All right, is that pretty much your week, Andre?
Yes, sir.
All right, Dave, what have you been up to this week? You done anything photography-wise?
I have, actually. It's a pretty good week. Monday was Labor Day, so I went to a flea market, and I picked up a pretty nice brownie Hawkeye, which I'm planning on flipping the lens on, getting
this
cool dreamy effect you've been talking about here lately.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try that out, and I got a couple of other things. They had like a cool little Kodak Hot Wheels car, too, which I hadn't seen before, so I picked some
nice
up. Yeah. Let's see. Wednesday, I shot some footage for actually three YouTube videos. I did kind of a batch shooting day. One I've already released actually on the flea market finds, and one was on the Canon SureShot OWL. I'm going to review here pretty soon. And then I did one on Sunstroke film from Double Film. So I got those filmed on Wednesday. Friday, I edited the first video and got that uploaded to my YouTube channel, which was good. And let's see, and then Sunday.
Your YouTube channel, The Old Camera Guy, right?
That is it, The Old Camera Guy. Yeah, it's all one word, shameless plug. let's see, Sunday, I got to actually do some shooting, too. I finished shooting a couple rolls. I shot a roll, actually, through the Brownie. I took your advice and just used the 620 spool that was with it for the take-up and just kind of shoved a 120 spool in there. And, you know, it worked fine.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah,
it was a little tight, but you know, I didn't feel like I was going to break it, so it worked out good. But I took a roll that way, and I'm going to flip the lens and then take another roll, shoot another roll, and that way kind of show the difference, kind of before and after flipping the lens.
Oh, awesome.
Shot a roll of Portra 160 through my Debonair, and a roll of slide film in my Rebel T2 that I'm probably going to cross-process in the C41 chemicals. So, yeah, pretty good week overall.
Sounds like it, man. You've been really, really productive. So, yeah. How many videos do you have up on your YouTube channel total at this point?
I actually just hit 50 this week. So, yeah, pretty decent number.
That is nice. Yeah, I really like your videos, too. I like the series you have going on with the where you're kind of comparing like the little $3 junk plastic cameras you see in thrift stores all the time. I love that little series you got going on there where you kind of put two of them, you pit two of them against each other. So, yeah. And,
$3, that's like a premium camera for me. They're usually $1 or $2.
right. Well, here in Louisville, the camera pickings are so slim that I think they think they can charge a whopping $3 for them here. So,
right.
But yeah. Okay, Dave, is that pretty much your week?
That was my week. Yep.
Awesome. Well, for me, you know, I pretty much kind of decided, other than like some family shots here and there, that I'm kind of taking this month off from photography because I'm getting ready for this art show. So, started doing a lot of printing and kind of getting frames together. So that's going to be pretty much my next couple of weeks until this art show. But a couple of cool things did happen. My cousin's daughter is enrolled in a high school film photography class for this semester. And is actually going to do darkroom work and everything. So super cool. But she needed a all manual camera. And so basically, I received an extra. I have a Pentax K1000 SE, but I received a second one from Brandon Remler, who sent me that gigantic box of Fuji goodness and also a Pentax K1000 SE. So I decided I'd let her borrow the second K1000 I have for this class of hers, because I think it's funny they gave her a list of cameras to look for, and the K1000 of course was at the top of the list, so she's gonna have a K1000 to shoot with for this class. And I kind of met the guy that's the teacher of this program because he stopped by my booth at the art show last year because she told him to look for me, and he talked to me a little bit, and I kind of like to see if maybe one Monday, since I'm off Mondays, if I could kind of go to the class and just kind of, I don't know if I'd want to really do a speech or not but I wouldn't mind kind of, you know, sitting in with them and maybe helping out on them, or I don't know what the rules are or anything, but I wouldn't mind kind of going in there and kind of seeing some kids kind of learning film photography, and I think it'd be kind of a cool thing. I would be tempted to plug the show a little bit, but we do a lot of cussing on here, and these are high school kids, so I
well, there's that. Plus,
something
they might
haven't heard.
The professor too. So
what's that?
They might think you're the professor too. I know.
I know that you're saying that it's getting pretty hot there in Louisville, Mike, but if you do, you know, end up doing that, make sure that you wear that peak coat.
Maybe I should wait till wintertime and then try to so I can wear the peak coat in there and my hipster glasses. Oh yeah, I can. They'll think I'm legit at that point. They'll actually think I know what I'm talking about, which would be the first time I've ever fooled anybody into that. So, the next kind of cool thing was went to my aunt's house yesterday for kind of, you know, the Sunday fun day, swimming pool day or whatever. And she had been over my grandmother's house, my grandmother who passed away several months ago, and she found her cameras, and nothing really great. I mean, just some 35 millimeter point and shoots. But it was still kind of cool to have, she gave these cameras to me. So I kind of have a couple of my grandmother's point and shoot cameras that she shot so many family snapshots with. So that was kind of cool to get. But the really cool thing was one of the cameras was like the last film camera she used before she got like a little digital compact camera. And it had like a half roll of film in it. And so I'm going to finish that roll up and develop it. And it's no telling what's on there because half of it's been shot. So I'm going to probably see, you know, some of my grandmother's last shots that she took on film. And and also in this baggie, there was like maybe two, three undeveloped rolls that were finished in this baggie as well. So I'm going to develop those too, because there's going to be certainly some family snapshots that we haven't seen at all on some undeveloped film rolls. And in this little kind of bag old cameras that I received from my aunt that she found in my grandmother's house as they're kind of cleaning her house up right now. So, so very, very cool. I was kind of very glad to get that, because they've been asking me for a while. Is there anything of hers that I'd like, you know, that would remind me of her, you know, or whatever. And I couldn't think of anything that would remind me of her more than cameras, because she always had a camera in her hand. And so very, very, I was very happy to get a kind of get a hold of that. I thought that was I can't think of anything else I would want more from her collection of stuff she's accumulated in her life. So I thought that was really cool. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was kind of unexpected. I wasn't sure if I was kind of worried because she does a lot of she used to run a booth at like a peddler's mall, and I was worried that once she went digital, maybe she put those film cameras in her booth and sold them. But no, the two that I remember her using was in this thing. So she never she didn't sell them. I did manage to get my hands on them. So it's pretty cool. So yeah,
very cool.
Yeah. So all right, I think that's pretty much our weeks. And I think we might have a lot of questions here on the Facebook group. So we'll try to leave plenty of time for that. So let's go ahead and take a break here, and we'll come back in the second segment and find out what the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group has come up to talk with, what subjects they've come up with for us to talk with Mr. Dave Mahaly. So we will take a break and be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back from the break, and as always, we like to have people on the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group ask questions of whoever, whatever guests we have on Monday nights. And again, as always, come through with flying colors and have some really good questions for Mr. Dave Mahaly. So let's go ahead and jump right on in that. Andre, what's the first question from the Facebook group?
First question comes from Sherry Christensen, of course, host of the Embrace the Grain podcast. And leader of the Frugal Film Photographers Project, who asks, how old are you? Just kidding. Here's a real question. What is the most difficult part of running a YouTube channel or vlog? And thanks for doing it, by the way.
Yeah, so Sherry, the short answer is I will always be 2 years younger than you. and I'm not outing her, because if you listen to Embrace the Grain, her podcast, she actually said she was looking for a camera from 1967, just like her. And I came around about 2 years later, so I just turned 50 last month, actually.
Oh, wow.
What's the most difficult part of running a YouTube channel? You know, Sherry, it's probably the same thing that's difficult for you doing the podcast, and that's just finding the time to do it. Really, the time, I think, is the biggest factor. Mm-hmm. With YouTube channels specifically, each one, if I'm doing a camera challenge or even a camera review, I'll shoot at least two rolls of film. Of course, then you got to develop it, dry it, cut it, scan it, edit the pictures, and then shoot all the video, and then edit that together, make a thumbnail, upload it, put the tags on it. So it's a pretty time-consuming process. A lot goes into it, but I mean, I'm having a blast doing it, but time is definitely the hardest part of it, I would say.
Do you find, a lot of times I love to kind of, after watching a video, just kind of see what people comment. Do you read the comment section? Do you get in, and do you get a little bit, do you get some venomous enemas in the comments that are,
not too bad. I mean, you know, the hater's going to hate. We know that.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, it's been largely positive. So, but I do. Yeah. I take the time to read the comments. I respond to most of them, even if they're negative ones. I mean, why not?
Right.
So I really enjoy the engagement on the channel. So yeah, it's one of my favorite parts.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, because it kind of makes it seem a little more interactive if you actually kind of engage with the comment section like that. I can see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Andre, what we got next?
Well, it's kind of it sort of leads well from the one that Sherry just asked, but Matt Murray asks here, how does the film photography vlogging world, and I don't know if you consider yourself a vlogger, Dave, differ from the film photography podcasting world?
And that's
at some stage, I'd love to vlog, so I'm interested in your thoughts on this.
That's Matt Murray from the Matt Loves Cameras podcast.
Matt Loves Cameras, yeah, which is another great podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think doing the YouTube channel, and it does kind of have vlogish, I guess, aspects to it. It's probably both harder and easier to do than a podcasting thing, I would think. I think the harder part is, you know, just you got to worry about lighting and if you're in focus, if you're staying in focus, that sort of thing. So that's probably a bit harder than doing a podcast. But I think part of it's easier too, because, and you guys have talked about this before, photography is obviously a very visual medium, and
sure,
you know, we're sitting here talking about it, and it's sometimes it's hard to translate, you know, what a picture is just by using your words. It's a lot easier when you're doing a video. We just show the picture. So in that aspect, I think it's probably easier. So Matt Murray is great at kind of painting a picture in your mind, just using words. I'm thinking particularly of some of his episodes on like his trips to Indonesia. He's just very descriptive. He does a lot of research too when he does camera reviews. But again, you can almost see the picture in your mind the way he describes it. So he really excels at that.
Yeah, maybe we should have him on next time we do a double exposure challenge to describe the photos. He's pretty good at it.
Better than some people?
yeah, maybe. That's, you know, better than anybody on this podcast, probably.
Yeah, I think we did a pretty decent job with Sherry's help.
Oh, yeah.
With Sherry's help, obviously. But
no, it's hard, though. It's,
yeah.
You're trying to convey, you know, what you see, and you have to use your words, and it's just, you know, there's a reason why they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah.
Not that, obviously, you know, you can't do a solo podcast, as is the case with Matt, but I've honestly sort of been interested in seeing the sort of, maybe consolidation isn't the right word, but the joining of forces recently, what with, you know, Ian Barnaby Nutt joining Sven Olaf Humberset on Viewfinder Vikings, Ed, who I had been, you know, kind of trying to peer pressure to start his own podcast for months and months. Now he's part of what, 2, 3?
He's on 2 now. Yeah. Track.
Did you ever give him that mic that you were supposed to, he won from the 200th episode giveaway?
No, he didn't need it. He blew off my peer pressure of starting the podcast. And then once he started podcasting, he was like, no, I don't need it.
So I guess we know. I guess we know what you're giving away for the 300th episode, right?
potentially. But I guess kind of the question that I was trying to ask was, you know, with podcasting, it seems to be pretty popular. And in my mind, like obviously, I can't imagine doing any of this without Mike, just because I would be so lazy to even start and wouldn't know how to edit.
Or even like do your solo show this last week.
Anywho, do you find that it's kind of harder to do it solo, or do you prefer kind of working alone when it comes to the YouTube space?
Yeah, for YouTube, I don't know. I think I do kind of like doing it alone. Like it takes a great amount of time, but I probably like it that way. Although I would be definitely open to doing some kind of collaborations with other creators too. I think it would be kind of fun, whether it's a challenge kind of thing or a review of some sort. But yeah, I don't know. I think I like it solo for the most part, but I'm definitely open to collaborating.
It would be kind of interesting to see like a YouTube video where maybe you and another YouTube superstar kind of like maybe shoot the same film stock or something, or and have different opinions on one video about it or something. That I could see how you could kind of tie in something like that. It would be kind of a fun collaboration. Yeah.
I like how you said another YouTube superstar. I think you've just elevated me a little bit, but thank you.
That's what we do around here. We're here to prop you guys up, you know. So that's
how many beers have you had so far?
I just opened up number 2. So, in about a half hour, it's gonna be a full on love fest. So it's just. okay. So do you, as far as like filming the YouTube videos, do you kind of just set things on a tripod? I mean, you're doing it all yourself, and you know, do you have anybody ever help you or?
For the most part, I do. I've been listing my kids, actually, because it's cheap child labor. So sometimes they'll hold the camera and do stuff. But yeah, it's usually me and a tripod. And, you know, that works.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. What we got next, Andre?
So this one, a lot of kind of people said asked similar things, such as Matt Murray, who we just heard of, Joel Perlis, as well as Brian T. McGraw, who are all kind of essentially asking, what's your favorite point-and-shoot camera? I think a lot of us sort of tend to notice that on your YouTube channel, there seems to be kind of an emphasis, or at least just a lot of videos on, you know, point-and-shoots of different levels of quality and craftsmanship.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of good ones out there, and I've got a lot of them, again, just kind of trolling the thrift stores throughout the years. You know, probably my favorite one, if we're talking strictly point and shoot, I would actually probably say the Minolta AFC is one of my favorites. And again, doesn't get a lot of love. It's not one of the fancy, you know, Kardashian Jenner kind of cameras, but it's pretty nice. It's basically, to me, it's kind of an autofocus LCA, because it's got a similar form factor. The ISO range is about the same. It's pretty quiet, so yeah, I'd probably go with the Minolta AFC. It's a handy little camera.
Wasn't there one you did on a, was it the Pentax 35?
Yes, PC35AF. Yeah.
That's a pretty good one, isn't it?
That's a real solid, I mean, that's a heavy hitter, literally. It's a little bit heavier, but yeah, I had a real good experience with that one, too.
Mm, well, that is the working man's compact camera, so, I mean, you can't go wrong with it, so.
True enough.
And any APS? Have you shot any APS?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
All right, well, I'll take it. You're no longer a podcasting set. Superstar. I'm going to have to knock you down to, like, I don't know, minor leagues, I think. But
Dave, going back to what you said earlier about the cameras that you and your family shot as a kid, have you ventured back into the realm of like 110 and 127?
You know, Andre, I've got probably 3-4 rolls of 110 in my fridge, and I just can't bring myself to do it. You know, they're long expired. I don't have any fresh stock like the some of the new ones you see, but yeah, I could see myself shooting 110 again. I mean, the issue now is, you know, I've been developing my film at home for a while now, and I don't have any reels that'll fit the 110. Honestly, that's probably my biggest stumbling block. That, and then figuring out how to scan it later. But that's why I probably haven't done it yet.
Yeah, there's a Yankee Clipper reel that will actually go down to 110. Granted, those are kind of shitty reels, but, you know, there is a reel out there that will adjust down to 110. I have no idea how hard it is to load, but, you know, I guess there is at least an option there. Whereas with me, you know, with the APS Revival, you know, it's the hottest trend in film photography. It's taking over the world by storm. I had to make my own reels, kind of cut down some reels, and they work. It works fine. I guess theoretically I could do the same with 110, but I mean, why shoot 110 when, you know, APS is the large format of miniature format? So,
Well, you cut down a reel for Sherry Christensen too, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's not too hard, and it works. Hers didn't come out as well as that mine did, but you know. But hopefully she'll have some good luck out of that. But what we got next, Andre?
So Jess Lance is kind of like hinting what I assume is already going to be a pretty high number. But he asks here. So Dave, what is the camera count up to at this point?
Oh, yeah, Jess, this is embarrassing. I did inventory a little while ago, and usable cameras that I might conceivably shoot. The number is probably, it's like 139, which I know.
Goodness,
I know
that
I have
is
a problem.
So much higher than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I know. Oh, and you're really making me feel good now. in my defense, most of those are, again, the cheap, crappy thrift store cameras that I got for a dollar, maybe $2, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you add in,
camera's a camera.
That's why I'm giving you the straight number. If you add in cameras that I probably wouldn't use again, like maybe the pack film cameras and... Well, I'll throw a 126. I don't see myself shooting 126 again. It's probably about 20 more than that. So basically an ungodly, unreasonable number is the answer.
Now, like, so I'm sure you get a lot of cameras. You see a camera in a thrift store. You probably, if you're like me, I tend to try to save.
Yeah.
Try to save any of them if I see them. And especially,
that's right.
Like,
you want to rescue them. Yeah.
Plus, right. Yeah.
You know, people give me cameras. I mean, that happens all the time with my family members. Oh, here's a camera. I thought you'd like it. Okay. So I get those too. So I haven't bought all those cameras, but I bought way too many of them.
So, I mean, I guess you kind of have plans in the back of your mind. You think, well, I can make a YouTube video out of this at least and shoot one roll of film through it or whatever. But after you do that and you know, maybe you'll never use it again. Do you sell them, or are you kind of in a situation where I probably have 10 of those junk cameras myself. And it's like, you know, you can't really sell them. What do you do with them? You know, like,
that's about right. You can't even give these things away half the time.
Right.
You know, I've sold a few at like garage sales, and like we've had yard sales and stuff. And one of the heartening things was this last yard sale we had, It was a younger girl, probably in her 20s, I suppose. Uh-huh. And it was this bright red, cheap Chinese no-name camera. And she thought it looked cute, but she was actually going to shoot it. So I'm like, you know what? Get it in the hands of a younger person. That's awesome. That's the future of film photography. That's what's going to, I think, keep this thing going. So I have sold a couple. I've given a couple away. So, yeah, I mean, I recycle them sometimes.
Well, yeah, and you never know. That girl might start a YouTube channel called The Young Camera Girl. So
there you go.
All right. So what we got next, Andre?
So sticking here on the gear side of things, Jack Allen asks, what is the worst design camera you've ever used / owned?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, Jack, actually, I follow him on YouTube. He's got a YouTube channel, too. He's got a whole series called People and Coffee. And this is probably an oversimplification, but what he does is he takes portraits of baristas, coffee people, with his Rolleiflex, and then this is the best part—he develops them in Cafenol.
Oh, awesome!
I mean, how cool is that, right?
Yeah.
I did some portraits once in a coffee shop and developed them with Cafenol.
Yeah, that's so cool, so cool. Mm-hmm. You might want to cover your ears for this one, Mike, because the worst one I've used is actually Pentax. One I reviewed probably a couple months ago, it was the Pentax Zoom 280P. And okay. The reason I said I didn't, you know, I think it's the worst design is it was like super heavy. It takes two CR123 batteries, which is no camera should take two. I mean, especially a point and shoot, and that's what this is. And it took two of them. it just, you know, it's got the little coin slot thing on the battery cover. And I'm not really crazy about that, although it probably is more stable, but. Probably the biggest thing I didn't like about it was it's got the zoom lever on the back. And if you wear glasses, you end up knocking your glasses off half the time. So I really didn't like the design. Although, surprisingly, and I said this in my video, it shot a lot better. I mean, I was just prepared to hate and just dump all over this camera. But I actually really liked the pictures I got with it. So I probably would shoot it again. But as far as like the worst design, yeah, I'd probably give it to that one.
Okay. Well, you know. No longer a podcast superstar, but you know, you're doing all right. Okay, what's up next, Andre?
So polar opposite of that, Gary Clannon asks, what is the camera that you have the most fun shooting and why?
Oh, most fun shooting. You know, lately it's been the Nikon Light Touch AF, and that's the one that's also known as the AF600. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one that Ed Conde is using for his his pano project.
Yeah, it's a favorite among the point and shoot pano lovers out there.
Yeah, and it's super thin. I mean, it fits in any pocket. It's got the fake pano on it, and it's dead simple to use. You know, another thing I like about it is you only have to hit the flash mode button once to turn off the flash, because some of the other ones, like the Stylus Epic, you got to hit it a couple times. So that's been a really fun little shooter.
It always surprises me on those flash modes. Why did they make you hit that damn thing so many times and turn the flash off on so many cameras? That seems like that would be the main thing that someone's going to do is turn the flash off. Like, it should be the very first press.
Yeah. Cannot stand it. That's like my biggest pet peeve on a lot of these. And again, even the trending ones, like some of the Yashica, like the T4, T5, same thing. You got to hit that button a couple of times. It's super annoying for me, at least.
Yeah, it sure is. And there's a time when you try to get a quick shot and you forgot, and the damn flash is back on, and like,
yeah, yep. So, yep.
Yep. Yep. It happens. But mm-hmm. Okay. What's up next, Andre?
To kind of throw in a funny one here in the middle of it, Matt Jones asks, what is the secret to your uncanny Mike Gutterman impersonations? And obviously, we're going to need an example.
All right, Mike, just remember, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And I think at some point you're probably going to cut my mic. So, you know, if I had to analyze it, there's probably three, four things, I guess, to go into it. The first thing is, and this one might get overlooked, is kind of the cadence or the rhythm, because you do have a very specific, I guess, manner of speech, and it's almost like a little bit of a stammer, almost. It's not a stutter. it's a little bit like
that's my
like,
mouth working
remember
faster.
The foghorn leghorn. I say, boy.
It's my mouth working faster than my brain. I think it's
maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. You got there's a little bit of a drawl, and I guess for me, I kind of took Billy Bob Thornton from the movie Sling Blade. You remember that one? I dialed it back a little bit because he was in that. He was like, all right, then, bring my taters. And so I just kind of toned it down a little bit. And that's kind of the draw. Right. You got a couple of key phrases that, you know, that keep popping up, like, all right, folks, is one.
rolls of film.
Yeah, rose. And that would be a good drinking game, too. If every time you said, all right, folks, you could just take a drink. But that could get ugly pretty
quick. Taking over the world by storm.
Right. Yeah. So there's pet little phrases. So you throw in a couple of those, and that's usually a good one. probably the obvious thing that everybody picks up on is, I guess, I don't know what you want to call it, you have a little bit of a rasp or
a little bit of gravel growing around.
Gravel. Yeah, that's a good word. Gravel.
30 years of whiskey and cigarettes, Mike.
might have something to do with that. Maybe it could be a coincidence. I don't know, but you got the rasp. So for that, what I did was I kind of took, kind of a Neil Diamond voice. If you envision like Longfellow Serenade, such were the plans I'd made. Yeah. But again, you got to dial it back a little bit because you're not that far over the top. So just, again, bring it down a notch and then you're halfway there. And again, if you just, drop your L's a little bit, like, for me, it's easy. Like I can see instead of the old camera guy, I'm like the old camera guy.
OD. Yeah, that's it.
You throw it all together and, it's a passable gutterman.
All right. Well, I'm going to challenge you to do an impression of me asking Andre what the next question is. So there you go. There's your physical challenge. So there you go. Take it away.
All right, folks. What do we got next, Andre?
it's uncanny. Anyways, Neil Waybright asks, what has changed both better and worse in your photography over the years?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one. Well, I don't know about better. Actually, this one might be better and worse at the same time, because I think I'm probably more willing to take chances and experiment with my photography now, which it can be better in a way because you get maybe more, happy accidents. Maybe it's worse because you get more, I don't want to call them mistakes or failures, but just unexpected things. So that's probably the biggest thing. And I think I branched out a little bit more into maybe more experimental film stocks, too, which I kind of like playing around with the, stuff like Yodica and Psych Blues and all that. And I didn't do any of that when I started. So that's maybe kind of a new thing too for me.
Do you think you're kind of like getting maybe what kind of got your obsession going for film photography, the kind of the Lomography movement when it was kind of really just starting out, kind of getting on the ground floor of that? Do you think that's kind of kept you a little more adventurous in what you choose to shoot possibly?
I definitely think so. Cause I was almost kind of intimidated at first, but then, you look at the 10, the golden rules of Lomography, and it's be fast, you shoot from the hip. And then, rule 10 is, there are no rules. So that really kind of opens it up. So yeah, I think if I hadn't been exposed to that, I'd be a lot more maybe rigid and regimented in my photography. But because of the whole Lomography thing, yeah, I think that does make you a little freer. At least for me, it does.
Sure, sure. And obviously the most important rule is the fact that there are no rules. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I always kind of think about when I think of Lomography, some of these stranger films, don't have a whole lot of experience with the actual Lomography films themselves, or like any of the Revelog or double stuff that you're trying right now. Mm-hmm. But having kind of dipped my toes a little bit into the pond of weirdness that is these ultra low ISO stuff with the help of Michael Bartosek.
Yep.
It's just that it's fun, for my day-to-day photography. I'm not super duper adventurous. It's a lot of Tri-X, a lot of Double-X, a lot of, Kodak Gold and Portra 400. But I have a lot of fun, putting something a little weird in a sort of backup camera, with a rangefinder being sort of my daily driver, putting in something a little kind of out of the box into a 35mm SLR in my backpack. And when I see something that would be interesting, pulling it out to shoot. And especially when I cut those rolls down from 24 or 36 down to smaller lengths, that helps me, because these weird things I do view as much more sort of just having fun, experimental, and I can't last an experiment 36 exposures in one in one go. I don't think I have that patience.
Yeah. I find myself, you know, a lot of times when I do go out with like a you know, really nice camera, say a you know, Pentax SLR or like my 6.7 or in a medium format camera or my Leica, if I go out with one of those fancy pants cameras, I almost always go out with a toy camera, a Hoga or something, because there's something about, part of me wants to have like that perfect shot, and then part of me wants that kind of lo-fi shot at the same time. And, yeah. and so I have a hard time going out without without having at least one junky toy camera. It's like I almost have to always bring one. And the bad thing is, as little as I've spent on those, as much as I've spent on some of the other cameras that my good cameras or whatever, sometimes I like the Hoga shots a lot better. Seems to always happen that way. Yeah.
Well, and you've said you have that magical Hoga too. That's just, I mean, you got that special lens. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's that lens. I swear to God, if that Hoga dies, I'm gonna have to attach that lens to another Hoga body or something, because I don't know what it is, man. It's so super sharp in the center, but it has all the good Hoga qualities on the outside with the, you know, the kind of as it gets towards the outside, it darkens and the blurriness. But the center, yeah. the actual center of the photo is amazingly sharp for that crappy plastic lens, you know. And
yeah, I've got some old Dianas that are like that. I've got actually like three Diana and some clones, and there's this one, it's a Windsor, and it is like by far my favorite. The other ones are good. I like them well enough, but that one is just, it's got something special.
I've kind of wanted to get like a vintage Diana. I used to have like the Diana from Lomography, F Plus or whatever. And that one, I ended up selling it because it was just, even the center was not, there was like no sharpness whatsoever. So I kind of think maybe I should try a vintage one. I mean, you can get them cheap enough. And
you might have to get a couple to get one that you like. Because again, right. there's a lot, just like the Hogas, there's a lot of variability on the old Dianas.
Sure. And I feel like maybe I've already won the lottery on my Hoga, so I'm cursed to like never get a good toy camera again, because like, you got lucky once. That's it.
Yeah.
We got to give the luck to somebody else now. So
yeah, there you go.
So there you go. All right, Andre, what we got up next?
Well, seeing as how we're on the gear discussion again, Christian Hillen asks, what is your deserted island camera and why? One camera for the rest of your life. Conveniently, there's a CLA palm tree and a darkroom grotto, as well as an endless supply of film.
Oh, all right. So first of all, if there's an endless supply of film, can I just move to that island right now?
Right.
Yeah, give me a map. I'm there. So let's see. Deserted island camera. You know, two of them come to mind. One is the one I mentioned earlier, which is the Lomo LCA. And that one, though, honestly, is probably more for sentimental reasons, because, again, I got that late 99, early 2000, and boy, 2000 was a pretty momentous year for me. It was within the span of like 8 days, I went on my first date with my wife, and then my mom passed away, like in a week, basically.
Wow.
And the Lomo thing, and you talked about here recently how the photography, for a lot of people, can almost be like therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think I realized it at the time, but it definitely helped me get through that loss of my mom. You know, looking back on it, I realize it now. And because of that, I think, I have that sentimental attachment to it. But functionally, if I had to just use, you know, one camera forever on this island with all that film, you know, I'd probably lean more towards the other one I was thinking about, which is I have a Canon Elan 7NE. And that is that's a nice camera. That's like one of my better cameras, and it's capable. I've got, you know, a bunch of lenses for it too. So I'd probably go with the Canon Elan 7NE.
Well, the nice thing is too, that island has a dedicated repair center grotto. So you can just, you don't have to worry about the electronics in either of those cameras, right? You're covered. So
there you go. Even better.
Now, with you were talking about your mother passing away. Was there a situation was you too early in your photography where you didn't really kind of like, was you able to, did you ever get like good portraits ever or good photos ever, or was it?
You know, that's the sad thing is it was a little bit too early on, you know, and I didn't really shift to that focus later. So I've got a lot better pictures than my dad, who he passed away in 2014. But by that time, you know, I had a lot more established with photography. So I got, you know, great pictures of him. But that's probably one of my bigger regrets is I wasn't really into it that much yet. So I kind of missed out on that one.
Sure, sure. Yeah, which, again, drives home the point of taking pictures of loved ones now, folks, because you don't know how long they're with us. You never know, right?
That's so true, so important. You bet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Andre, what we got up next?
Let's see. Jim Graves asked, with all, you know, some of the stuff that you are experimenting with, what is your go-to film, color and black and white?
Yeah, go-to, I guess if you mean go-to film by what I use the most, I'd probably say for color, it would be Fuji Superior 400, because they've got it. I've got a local store here that sells it like dirt cheap. You can get like still, they haven't raised the prices yet. Maybe I shouldn't say this on air, but you can get three rolls for like $11.
That is cheap.
That's, you know, these days that's a great price. Black and white, same store always has Ilford HP5 Plus in stock, and that's a good workhorse film. It's, you know, it's good all purpose, dries pretty flat for me at least. So those are probably the ones I use the most, or my workhorse or go-tos.
What kind of store is it? Is it like a camera store?
Yeah, it's got a little bit of everything. So it's called, it used to be called World of Used Photography. Now they call it World of Photography. And it's in Columbus. I live northeast of Columbus, just a little suburb. So it takes me not even a half hour to get there. Of course, the other place I go to is Midwest Photo Exchange, where Matt Marash works. In Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
That's another great place, too. So I'm lucky that I'm within 20 to 30 minutes of two, you know, fantastic local stores where I get most of my stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you gotten any impression from those stores of this film kind of renaissance going on? Are they feeling it?
Yeah. You know, as a matter of fact, those two stores, I mean, I can walk in there and they've got the funky stuff. So if I want a roll of, you know, Psych Blues number 2, they've usually got it in the fridge.
Wow.
I've gotten Revlog texture film there before. I got double film Sunstroke film there before. So they're even stocking some of the, you know, the weird boutique kind of stuff too. So yeah, I think it's very much in full swing.
And they're actually feeling it enough to where they're keeping, they're paying for the energy bill to keep refrigerators going. Cause at my camera store is the kind of the chain of camera stores we have here in Louisville. They got rid of their film refrigerators for a long time ago and just have it sitting on a shelf. They stopped paying the electric bill
for kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, you know, I used to go in there back in the day, you know, all their professional films were in the, you know, big double, you know, glass door freezer, refrigerator. And, I remember going in there, not that many years ago. And they were just sitting on a shelf, you know, and, it's like, wow, that kind of bugs me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. 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 But okay. All right. So, what's up next, Andre? I guess we're kind of burning through these, right?
Yeah, we are. Let me quickly scan through here. I've been kind of jumping around all over the place.
So by the way, folks, if we don't answer your question, just blame Andre. Just get mad at him.
This is where Mike can edit.
Did I hear some snoring?
Mike's not going to edit anything.
Okay, here's one. Corey Miller asks, any favorite or secret spots to photograph? Dave and I live in the same city, but haven't met yet. And one thing that I kind of want to add to this is that, like, that thing that a lot of people say of, like, oh, well, you know, I'm out of things to photograph in my city, or my town is boring. Like, how does that kind of factor in, you know, you having a family? Do you kind of get to sort of explore a little bit beyond, like, the immediate neighborhood with your photography? How far do you venture out or anything
like
that?
You know, it's kind of like you were talking about recently on the podcast, like looking at Eventbrite and kind of finding out things that are going on within, like, you know, 1 to 2 hours from you. I've taken a couple little day trips. I took my younger son, who's 12 now, and I actually loaded a roll of HP5 into the Minolta AFC and gave it to him and said, here, have at it. And we shot some pictures in a place, it's called Mount Gilead. It's probably about 50 minutes, maybe not quite an hour away from our house. And he had a ball. It was just fantastic. So I've done a lot of trips with him like that this summer. It's got to be within 2 hours to make it a decent, like, day trip, because, you know, if I don't want to stay overnight kind of thing. So, but yeah, with my son, we've taken a couple trips like that all around town. For Corey, he's got a great Instagram feed too. If you're not already following, he's Grains. What is his? Grains_of_silver. He's got a lot of good work on there.
Yes, but, he does.
Yeah. And again, we live in the same town, but he's asking about spots around here. I've got, again, kind of my go-to spots. Anytime I want to try out a new camera or new-to-me camera, I go to the south end of Columbus. There's a place down there called Dan's Drive-In. It's an old diner. And within a couple of blocks, you can find there's this really cool old water tower down there. There's train tracks, which are always great. And Mike, you'll appreciate this. There's a fire escape down there too. So, everything's a solitary tree. It's got pretty much everything that we all, right? You know, yeah, we all photograph. But that's a great place. About 45 minutes north of our area is a place called Mount Vernon is the city, and they've got something called Aerial Foundation Park, and it's an old PPG plant, Pittsburgh Plate Glass, that they tore down most of the buildings, but they left some of them in kind of varying states of disrepair, and they made a park out of it that has these ruins like in the middle. It is the coolest thing. I've filmed a couple of my videos there for I think the Sunstroke film I did there and Red Scale film, but it's super cool place. That's probably my favorite place, and again, it's only about 45 minutes from where we live. Very cool.
Do you find when you kind of go to these places several times over and over, do you find that you still see new things to shoot, different angles, you know, or
yeah. Yep. And not only different things to shoot, different angles, but kind of what we were talking about before, different film stocks, too. Because, sure. You know, you take a Revlog film, it's not going to look anything like the pictures you took on HP5 or even Psych Blues or one of these other funky films. So always new film stocks, different cameras, obviously going to give you different perspective, different looks. Take a toy camera one time, take a heavy hitter another time. So there's people that say, you know, they're kind of running out of things to shoot. I don't think they're looking hard enough. There's always something. There's always some new angle you can find.
I think it's a kind of an advantage to film photography that maybe we've talked about or maybe we haven't. But like, because we have so many film stocks, so many different cameras with so many different looks. Now, granted, I guess you could go shoot all those things on digital and do all your and make the looks different in Photoshop or whatever or Lightroom, but just being able to go out with all these different film stocks, all these different cameras, different lenses that have different looks, I think that it does kind of give us a little more chance to like go to the same areas and reshoot the same area and kind of get something completely different than maybe if you just always shot digital, because I could see where it would get really old taking these very perfectly exposed, super sharp digital pictures of the same place every single time. You know, I think we do have an advantage with variety that can kind of keep things a little fresh for us. So, sure.
Well, the other advantage for me, too, is that I have very little patience for post-processing. I'd rather just get these effects, you know, in camera and be done with it and not have to worry about it later.
Absolutely.
At a computer.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent enough time on the computer just editing this damn podcast. I don't want to get off on this.
Especially this one.
Right. Okay, so what's up next, Andre?
Let me see. I really should be kind of spending the time in between questions looking for the next one.
You know, you're engaging in the you know, you're actually listening to our guests and not falling asleep on them. So, I mean, you know, props to you, you know, so.
Well, Bill Thu asks here, if a brand new film camera were to be released tomorrow, what would it need to do before you would consider buying it? Price, format, characteristics, etc. And follow-up question, what does your answer mean for the future of film photography?
Wow, that's a deep one.
Yeah.
You know, the last new film camera I bought was last year when Lomography came out with that Diana Instant Square, which is actually pretty cool. And, you know, honestly, probably price was a big factor on that one because I was an early bird. I got right in on it like the first hour, I think, and it was like $69.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, I got to get that. So price was definitely a factor there. And I don't know, if I'm looking at a new camera now, it's the price has to be, you know, reasonable or affordable, and you know, for me that's probably $200 or less, or if my wife's listening, maybe it's $50. Because I am, you know, I am cheap when it comes to camera, but not film. I think the future of film photography relies, you know, probably more on the sustainability of the film itself. So I don't cheap out when I buy film. You know, I buy, you know, the good stuff, and I don't typically buy expired film. I mean, if I have expired film, I certainly shoot it, but I don't go out of my way to buy it unless it's a stock you can't get anymore. But I think probably the film itself is what's going to keep film photography going more so maybe than the cameras, because, well, there's a whole lot of cameras out there. You know, I've got 150 myself, right? But the other thing, you know, as far as the future of photography is concerned, you know, if they do come out with a new camera, if it's something I'm not interested in, I know that there's probably a big segment of the population, or at least the film community, that would be interested in it. And that's one of the great things about this community, as far as, you know, going forward, there are enough different types of shooters that like different formats, different types of cameras, to keep it going. I think when you had Matt Melcher on the from Box of Cameras on recently, he was talking about, you just point and shoots, they don't work for him. He doesn't get along well with them. But, you know, he didn't say people that shoot point and shoots are idiots and they're stupid, right?
right.
But his perspective was, you know, they're not his bag. They're not his thing. But for me, you know, I love them. So there's enough variety, I think, that hopefully film photography, again, if they do come up with new cameras, if I'm not interested in it, there's enough interest by somebody else, and, you know, hopefully we'll sustain it.
I do think that I think we all want to see new cameras manufactured, because I think it would be a really feel-good thing for the community. And mm-hmm. and obviously, I think at some point, if this thing continues to go for another 20, 30 years, like we hope it does, maybe 100 years, let's say 100. But I think at some point, yeah, we might be really starting to hurt for cameras as a lot of cameras. But yeah. I still think there is, I think we somewhat over-exaggerate the need for new film cameras out there, because I think we all would like to see it. But we're not really that desperate just yet. There's still tons of perfectly mm-hmm. functioning film
right.
cameras.
Right. I think, yeah, right now you're right. But, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, as these cameras start to break down, yeah, sure. I could see where it could become a problem, sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we probably need to be laying the groundwork now. So I hope somebody's laying the groundwork now where some film cameras will be able to be manufactured by that point. But yeah, I think right now, we don't have to sound the alarm just yet. So, yeah.
Yeah. And when I kind of think about my own photographic needs, you know, there's nothing that is really sort of missing per se that a new camera would kind of fill. Well, with the exception of the Lomo LCA 120 that I'm still lusting after, which, yeah, you absolutely can consider that a new camera. I really don't sort of see myself, both in terms of like just sort of gas things, but also just in terms of like, okay, well, what is actually sort of missing from my setup? Like, maybe a few like lenses for systems that I already use, but I don't necessarily think that, with the exception of that Lomo, that in my personal kind of photography needs, or more accurately wants, I don't think that like a brand new film camera is what's going to scratch that itch.
Yeah, that's true, because I think maybe at the height, maybe the best thing that could come out right now is maybe like an SLR, like maybe what like Reflex is trying to do or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I've got so many SLRs, you know, like I would be glad that there's a new one on the market. And I think it's some interesting design choices they've made with it. But, you know, I'm swimming in SLRs, you know, and they all function. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's I'm sure there's a market for it, and I hope there is. But for me, I don't know that it would, you know, make me pull the trigger.
Right. And for me, if it's got to offer me something I can't already do with any of the cameras I have. You know, if they come up something that does something new, great, I'll get it. But if not, I can't really justify it at this point.
Right. Uh-huh. Which is where the Lomo LCA stands for me, because, you know, And it's actually interesting, both because like it very much fits what like Lomography is trying to do, with the fact that, you know, it's a point and shoot, it's scale focus, it's kind of exaggerated wide angle, but that also, all of those things happen to fit, you know, a gap that exists where, like, yeah, if you look at just the format itself, it's like, well, I have a Rolleiflex, so in theory I shouldn't need a point and shoot 6x6 camera, but the Rolleiflex has a normal lens, and it's, you know, manual focus and all that jazz, and it's, you know, much heavier. I can't just sort of like sling it around and carry it whenever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that you know, the LCA 120 is definitely I think that was a smart choice on their part, because it did feel like a gap that didn't really exist, a point and shoot 120 camera, you know, that was not really something that was really out there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think they were very smart to put that out. And I think things like that definitely have a place. And even I have been tempted by that camera on many occasions. So, but yeah.
if anybody has a used one that they'd like to sell or trade potentially, hit me up.
There you go. All right, what do we got up next, Andre?
I actually think, unless I'm missing something, I think it might be a good idea for us to take a break and then move on to the next section. And if I did skip over anybody's thing, you can yell at me in the comment section.
Dave, was there any questions that we missed that you saw that we need to cover?
I think we're probably good at this point. We don't want to jump the shark on this show.
We jumped the shark a long time ago, brother. Don't worry about that. I think we jumped the shark on Andre's 200th episode 15-minute love speech. I think it's kind of when it happened, but that's what people are pointing to. So
nice,
Andre.
No comment.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and take a break, and then we'll come back in the next segment, and we'll talk with Dave a little more. Andre and I will think of a couple more topics to talk about with Dave. So we'll be right back right after this break, folks. All right, folks, we're back for the final segment, and this is a segment, you know, Andre and I, over this little course of this episode, have come up with some questions of our own to ask Mr. Dave Mahaly, the old camera guy. So we'll start with Andre. Andre, what do you want to talk about with Dave?
So we are just now getting into the fall season. We're recording here on September, 8th, 9th, whatever. The year is kind of coming to a close. And initially, sort of the thing that popped into my head was a kind of late year resolution. So my question is, you know, what do you want to shoot more of in this last portion of the year that you have not gotten to shoot during the previous part of the year? And whether or not that kind of ties into any kinds of like New Year's resolutions of our photography that we had at the beginning of the year. How do you hope to, you know, spend these last few months of 2019 photographically?
Yeah, so it's one thing that we were touching on before, and that is shooting more family and documenting more family events, and just, you know, the mundane moments of our lives. And because I've not, you know, admittedly I've not been very good at that, so. If there's a resolution, that would be it. Just be more present with family, take the pictures. And, you know, I'm sure you get this too, where, your kids look at you and they're like, oh, not another picture, or your wife,
yes,
or whoever.
Yes, all the time.
Right. But you got to do it, because there's going to be a day when you won't get the chance. And that's a shame. So that's probably my biggest resolution for the rest of the year. And not just the rest of the year, but going forward. And I hope I can live up to that.
If I had a dime, every time my wife has had to explain, your father is into photography, you know what, just give him this moment, yeah. And to my kids, yeah, I'd probably have about $1.50 in my pocket. But so.
Yeah. No, that sounds all too familiar.
Yeah. Right. So how old are your kids, Dave?
Mine are, I think, a little bit behind yours. I've got a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old, both boys.
Oh, very close. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got two boys too, and thank God. So, because I've seen teenage daughters, and I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that.
That's kind of how I feel too. Yep.
On the family documentation side, I've been trying to do that more of the, you know, capturing my work family, my CineStill coworkers. Mm-hmm. Been doing that a lot recently with the Olympus XA. Now that I have the Nikon F100 and the 35 F2 lens also, that makes it great, because whereas obviously the XA is extremely portable and I have the side mounted flash, which is great for when we kind of, you know, go out to bars or restaurants. Whereas like something like a backyard barbecue or anything like that, or just in the office, being able to just kind of grab the camera from my desk, use the autofocus, etc., has been great. What kind of cameras do you usually reach for when you're trying to document family, and what impact does that have on your actual kind of image making process? Do you go for point and shoots to kind of always have something with you to capture like the little candid moments, or do you bust out an SLR or a medium format camera?
You know, sometimes it's both. I will have a point and shoot with me, usually in like a, you know, a pocket shooter that I'll put in, and sometimes I'll put color in that and maybe black and white and something else. I am a big fan, and again, you've talked about this before, of those 90s autofocus SLR. Specifically, I'm a Canon EOS guy. I know Sherry Christensen has talked about this on her podcast too. If you take just, you know, something simple like one of the Rebel bodies, and then you throw that 40 millimeter pancake f/2.8 lens on there, I mean, those weigh next to nothing. You can take them everywhere. So I mean, they're almost as light as some of these point and shoots. So sure. Those I think are great. And plus, you know, if you want to, you know, carry a bag with you, the Canon has a great 85 millimeter f/1.8 portrait lens that is just, I mean, beautiful. And I need to bust that out more. But I use those probably again, either Canon EOS, one of the Rebel or Elan bodies, those are really good for documenting. Again, autofocus. I use those kind of cameras more now than I used to. I used to be more into things like the XA and some of the other little rangefinders, but I got to tell you, seriously, the older I get, the less I want to fiddle with those little rangefinder patches, and the autofocus SLRs are for me, you know, great. And they're dirt cheap, too. I mean, they're not, you know, they don't really maybe get the respect that they deserve, so you can find them, you know, really inexpensively, usually.
I think that's the biggest selling point on them is the... For shots like that, the autofocus is just so handy. And
yeah,
because, you know, like I was taking portraits of the family and with the Pentax 6.7 in Florida, and I would be like, they'd be smiling. I was like, don't bother smiling yet. It's going to take me, give me about 30 seconds before I get this focus right. And then yeah, I'll tell you when to smile. Like, yep. And, but like an autofocus camera, you could have caught that in seconds. And in those 90s, you know, those 90s SLRs, the plastic Fantastics or whatever, yep, they're so capable and they're so cheap because they really don't get any respect, and because they don't look, yeah, cool or whatever. But and
they don't. They're ugly, but hey, they work.
Hell yeah, they do. Yeah, yep. I agree. Yep. All right. Well, Dave, one thing I wanted to talk with you about, you put up a video, I forget what you called it, but it actually, you know, I've watched quite a bit of YouTube videos. I'm not a huge follower of YouTube superstars, as maybe some people are, but this one particularly touched me, man, and I really, really liked it, and it just gave me all the feel good vibes, and I think it was like maybe why I shoot film or something like, yeah, that. That video, yeah, was fantastic. I just wanted to kind of hear a little bit
thank
about
you
that, and the kind of the motivation behind it, and because it was just, if you haven't seen this video, and you want to get some feel goods, all the feels, get a little goosebumps about why you shoot film, I highly recommend checking out this video. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you. That was Why Do I Shoot Film? And, you know, it started with a single picture I took of my brother, my older brother, and his wife, my sister-in-law. They wanted me to take, you know, a couple shots of them for whatever reason, and I said, fine, and I brought a digital camera with me, and of course, I brought one of my, again, one of those Canon EOS bodies, and I had my last roll of Fuji Acros 100, right? And I'm like, well, you're not going to get a better film than that to take pictures of these people on, so I took pictures at the local park again, it was just we walked to, and developed it myself in the DF96, another shameless plug for you, Andre. and when I, you know, I developed it, and then, you know, again, dried it, cut it, scanned it. And when I saw that picture, the first thing I popped into my mind is, you know, people have asked me, what do you shoot in film? Why do you still shoot film? It's such an old, it's a dead medium. And, you know, you got digital, you can see the pictures right away. And I looked at that picture, and I just thought to myself, this right here, this is why I shoot film. And I put a post on Facebook to that effect. And then I got to thinking, you know, I've been shooting film for a long time now. Like I said, I got my LCA better part of 20 years ago. So right, that got the wheels turning. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to kind of go through the archives a little bit, maybe pick out some pictures. And since that picture was in black and white, the picture of my brother and sister-in-law, I thought, you know, let's do a black and white theme. I filmed a little intro, just kind of, you know, inverting the Patterson tank and cutting up some negatives, that sort of thing, kind of put that in there. Found some music that kind of went well with it. And that's another thing I didn't mention before.
The music was fantastic for that video.
Yeah, and you know what, Mike? That was just from the YouTube Music Archive. That was like a free thing they had, but I mean, really? the time there was just like scrolling through all of these songs and downloading the ones that I want. And when I heard that one, I'm like, well, I'm done looking. That's the one right there.
Sure it is, yeah.
And that's another thing I didn't mention when Matt Murray asked about, you know, the difference between, you know, being on YouTube, doing a audio podcast. Just the power of pairing images with the right music is just, it's phenomenal. It's something that, again, you can't do it just with an audio podcast. But when you see the visuals, you pair it with the music, it's a powerful thing. It really is. And
there's a reason why people in Hollywood get paid big money to figure out what the right music for the scene is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. I mean, because it really does, I mean, pay off. So I just started this as like a little, I'm going to just make a little trailer for my YouTube channel, like a little 30 second thing, maybe a minute. And it just kind of blossomed and bloomed into this bigger thing. And looking through these pictures, I mean, I was just ugly crying by the end of it. Because, I mean, and it's something that for me is obviously extremely personal, because I know and have relationships with every person in that video. Somebody like yourself, like I said, you know, I mean, you certainly appreciated it, which is great. But there's a connection I have with every single person in there that just... it was almost overwhelming. It goes back to what we were talking about before, to Andre's question about, you know, what's your resolution? Take more pictures like that. Capture those moments before it's too late.
Wow. Nice. Nice. Yeah. Folks, I'm telling you, like, if there's a YouTube video you're going to watch this week, make it a point to watch Dave's, what was it called? Why I Shoot Film?
Why Do I Shoot Film?
Yeah. It's really powerful. Like, you know, I got a little emotional about it. I got to admit, it really resonated with me, man. And like, not too many YouTube videos have done that. So I got to give you serious props on that one. So yeah,
well, I appreciate that. And people in the film community, they'll recognize a clean shaven Mike Rosso. He makes an appearance in the video.
That's
too.
That's right. So. That's right. Yeah, that's
and
right.
The most formally dressed Mike Rosso I've ever seen.
He cleaned up pretty good. Yeah, and Matt Mirosh is in there, although I think he's under the hood with his large format rig. But so there's maybe a couple people that people recognize. But no, I appreciate that, Mike. Thank you.
Oh, no.
Well, one of the things also that I actually rewatched that video today before we recorded. And one of the things that kind of spoke to me a lot was that it's kind of rare these days with the YouTube film photography scene, which seems to be very much kind of aimed at like a younger audience. Gear reviews are, and not that you don't do those yourself, but that, you know, gear reviews of currently trendy film cameras are very much popular. That's something a little bit more kind of introspective, emotional, that kind of gets to the question of why we shoot. Was really refreshing. I tend to watch a lot of YouTube film photography content, and it's kind of rare that like I'll watch a video that a few weeks later I'll even kind of remember it at all.
Sure. Yeah.
And this was really really one of them, and it was why, like, when I found out that from Mike that we were going to be recording with you today, I was like, I want to go back and rewatch that video.
Yeah.
Because all the thrift haul stuff, just, you know, even if they are, you know, cheapy electronic point and shoots, it just makes me sad that I can't find anything. So kind of going back, I was like, well, at least I can watch this one and feel happy about film.
Yeah. Well, I think the golden age of thrift store shopping for cheap cameras is definitely over, but it was good while it lasted. And that's one thing I am glad I was actually cognizant of, you know, going to the thrift stores when I did, because... yeah, I got some really nice finds. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that golden age was probably about, say, maybe 05 to maybe up to about 2010, kind of that range.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And boy, man, I used to turn down cameras. There would be so many cameras at my local thrift store. I would be like, eh, you know, now I'd be like, oh my God, look at this 35 millimeter focus free. I need to buy this.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Andre, do you have any more questions? I think you had two, right?
Yes. So you know, obviously with this whole thrifting things and finding and buying cameras at great deals in the past, currently, etc. You mentioned that the number is pretty high up there, north of 150, and I do recall you saying that was workable cameras.
Yeah, I don't know. Doesn't count shelf queens.
Exactly. So where do you store all of these? Like, do you have shelves and shelves? Do you have like a basement that's just covered floor to ceiling in cameras? And what does your wife think about all this?
Well, we're still married, so
that's good.
We'll start with that. No, I've got actually kind of a loft that I use as a studio, and I paint as well. I do acrylic portraits and that kind of thing too. And I was fortunate enough to have a couple of those in the fine arts exhibition at the State Fair this year, and I actually sold.
Is there any place where people can see those?
You know, I had a dedicated website before, and unfortunately, I let that lapse, but. You know, I post that kind of stuff on Facebook that my personal friends see sometimes, so I don't really have a big outlet for it now, but I enjoy that too, which is, again, like we talked about before, the problem is finding the time to do it. But with the loft that I have, it's basically my all-purpose artistic studio of sorts, I guess, because I do my painting there, and I store my cameras there. I do have, believe it or not, I've got all of those stored pretty well on, I guess, 2.5 bookcases. They have multiple shelves on them, and the shelves have shelves on them. So I've got a pretty good system going right now, and I've got a couple of photo boxes where I store some of the SLRs and some of the lenses with like a little silica gel packet, so they, you know, to kind of keep them dry. Uh-huh. So surprisingly, I've got that amount of cameras in, like I said, about 2.5 bookshelves in a loft. So they're pretty well cordoned off, and my wife is awesome. She knows this is kind of my thing. And she indulges it, and I've got it pretty good. I can't complain.
Well, I think there's something to that. Like, my wife's very supportive of my photography, always has been. She's actually been very supportive of pretty much all my artistic endeavors, whether it be music or photography. But I think even more so in photography because, you know, she sees the benefit of the fact that, you know, we have these amazing portraits of the family when we go on a vacation or just in general life or whatever. And I feel like she and I both have always put a real importance and just I think our most prized possession is just our photo albums of just all the time we've spent together. At this point, I've been with her more years of my life than I've been without her. So, You know, we basically grew up together and. Well, we started dating at 19 years old, and yeah, so I've been with her longer than I've been without her in my life. But so she really appreciates the fact that we, even when I wasn't into photography, it was just snapshots. It was just the fact that we were documenting life. And I think now that I'm actually somewhat taking photography seriously, the photos have obviously increased in quality. But so I think she's very supportive of it because she sees results that. You know, that we're going to cherish for years to come, you know, so, yeah.
And even those snapshots you took years ago, I bet you really appreciate them now. I mean, it means so
absolutely.
Much to you now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were just crappy cameras and crappy, you know,
APS.
Kodak. A lot of it was APS. A lot of the 90s was APS. Yeah. So, but I mean, that is the hottest trend in film photography. It's taking all the world by storm. But if my house was to catch on fire, there's some cameras and guitars maybe I'd like to save, but the first thing I'm going for is the photo albums. Like, there's no question. Like, that's probably my most prized thing that we own. And because you just can't, you can't put a price on that, man. And so I think that's one reason why I think loved ones can be very supportive of photography because they see just how important that stuff is as the years go by. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's probably all the questions I kind of wanted to talk about. Andre, do you have anything else?
No, I think that's a great point to finish on.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Dave, it has been super, super fun to have you on the show, and it's been a long time coming, and I'm glad we were able to kind of make this happen. And
Me too.
It's been a really awesome to have you on, man. So how about you tell the fine folks where to check you out and all that stuff.
Yeah, probably the easiest place to find me, I'm on Instagram and YouTube, we've been talking about. I'm a little bummed. I was going to use the name Roxana Log. It's already taken, so right. I had to go with my second choice, which was The Old Camera Guy. It's all one word kind of smushed together. The Old Camera Guy.
Uh, So this little studio space you have, do you call it the old camera cave? Is that what?
I don't, but maybe I will now. Or maybe I won't. But I post on Instagram, I don't know, maybe once a week or so. I'm not on there all the time. Same thing for YouTube. I'm not on there. I try to get up once a week a video. If not that, at least a couple times a month. So again, you can find me on both of those platforms as The Old Camera Guy.
Instagram and YouTube, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing about YouTube, I mean, obviously we know it, but some people may not know. It's free to subscribe to a channel on YouTube. Really, all you have to do, you sign in with a Google ID and you hit a red button. That's literally all there is to it. So if you find a channel that you like, and there's a lot of good channels out there, you hit again, Google ID, it's super easy.
Is there also, some other...
If you hit the little notification bell thing, you can get a notification when Dave or anybody else that you subscribe to posts a video, which is super useful because I don't log into YouTube every day and kind of scroll through my subscription box for the ones that I care about watching and want to know when new videos are out. I always hit the little notification bell.
Yeah, me too. That's the easiest way to find out new content. Yep.
As somebody that doesn't really follow a lot of the YouTube channels a whole lot, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Dave. Is there any other channels that you would recommend that you particularly like in film photography that you'd like to kind of throw a shout out?
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. So I mentioned Jack Allen before, his People in Coffee. That's one I do follow. Matt Day is one that probably a lot of people out there know. Uh-huh. He's very popular. He's another Ohio guy. Lives down in Chillicothe, about an hour and a half from me. But he puts out a lot of good content. Much of it is film. Not all of it is. He does some digital gear, too. There's another channel called Danae and Andrew. Same thing. They put out digital content. They put out a lot of film, too. They just did one on different developers, I think, just dropped today. There's a younger lady called S-Rad on film, S-R-A-D on film. And she does all kinds of these funky emulsions, and she does film soup and cross processing and all this kind of cool stuff too. So those are some that again are probably worth a look.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Okay. So Andre, where can people check you out?
People can check out my photos on Instagram at Andre on film.
All right. And you can check me out on Instagram at Gutterman Photo, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. And that's where you can send in call-ins and imitations of my voice, as Dave's done in the past.
All right,
and,
folks.
you can join the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. And we also have an Instagram account under Negative Positives, mostly ran by a friend of the show, Mr. Bryce Randall. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about the hashtag Negative Positives. And if Bryce sees it, maybe he'll highlight it on the Negative Positives Instagram account. Okay, again, very much big, huge thanks to the old camera guy, Mr. Dave Mahaly, for joining us tonight. It's very, very fun. So let's go on and get out of here. Everybody have a great week. We will talk to you for the solo show, which I assume will be Andre this week. Who knows? It could be me again. It's hard to tell with that guy. But so until then, everybody have a great week. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool film photos.
Awesome. We'll see you soon. Thanks, folks. It's a mic test. Mic on the mic. Testies 1, 2, 2 testies. And Andre?
This is Andre's audio. Apologies, Dave, for the potty humor, but get used to it.
Dave?
You know, you didn't do this when Roxanna Angles was on. I don't know. She got special treatment.
Well, you know.
Yeah. For the record, testes 1-2 if we're taking inventory.
There we go. There we go.
A Gutter Man Cave production.